Welcome back to Up All Night. I'm Rahul Tandon. It's all about gadgets and technology on our phone-in. If you're having any problems or need something explaining, you can talk to our expert, Fevzi Tokup. You can call 0808 5909 693, text 85058, email upallnight@bbc.co.uk, or get in contact via social media using @5live. Fevzi, you're a very popular boy, I have to say. So let's run through some of these texts, because there have been quite a few of them. Been looking at fans today, says Simon from Doncaster. Slightly optimistic with the weather, maybe. But do you recommend any? Are the Dyson ones costing up to £500 worth the money?
Yeah.
£500 for a fan.
The Dyson fans are superior fans. So these are the ones that they look like a hoop, and they've sort of stolen some of the technology from the vacuum cleaners. And so, I mean, they're great inventions.
Were they ever one of your gadgets of the week?
No, I mean, look, if you gave me one of them, I'd happily use it. And I'd
if you had to buy
it,
one and spend £500?
Perhaps I'm not that stylish, but if I wouldn't spend my money there personally, because I don't think they're that much better. I think that they are better, but, you know, probably not worth the extra money, I suspect. You can buy perfectly good fans. The important thing about a fan is that you spend enough to make sure it's electrically safe, that it has, you know, the safety marks on it and so forth, and that it's, you know, don't buy things, you know, online that are just too cheap, that, you know, electrical items. It never ceases to amaze me, for example, that, you know, people will spend something approaching, you know, £500 or even £1,000 for a smartphone, and then they decide they want a second charger, so they go onto an auction website.
Oh, I've done that.
Or something else.
You buy that really cheap one, don't
you? Yeah, they spend £2.50 on a charger.
But it's the fact that you spend so much on the phone, you probably have no money left, do you, sometimes?
Yes, but... Yeah, the problem is, you know, it's very hard.
They never last, those charges.
Well, look, and sometimes they burst into flames, and therein lies the problem, because some of them even carry the safety marks on them as if they were safe, but they're not. They're fakes from top to bottom, and your protection against
that. But do you not think some of the... I mean, obviously, it's our own responsibility when we buy them, and we've seen, obviously, the horrific situation when it comes to fire over the last few days.
Absolutely.
But companies... that are selling them, you know, you can pick them up on a lot of the big websites, can't you? Should they be stopping doing that?
No, so look, the answer to this is you can't tell by looking whether something is dangerous or not.
But when you're buying it, you'll know saying you'll know from the price?
Yeah, and the price and also the provenance. So if you buy it from a reputable online retailer that you know and trust and has a reputation to protect, or, you know, a reputable department store or something like that, you don't have to, I mean, it's safest to buy, you know, the branded item, but you don't have to buy the branded item. But don't be spending £2 or £3 on a charger, because that's just too cheap. It could be all right, but it may not be. So it's better to go for something mid-priced, because then you're protecting your phone, your home, and your family's lives, you know, because these things, some of them do burst into flames. They overheat. They don't have the right circuitry. They don't comply with the safety standards, even though they've got the safety marks on them. Some of them are like that. So if you, I'm not just pointing out auction sites, but, you know, some of those you get very small, you know, one man band retailers that are selling out their bedroom, or just people who, you know, don't really care. They don't have a reputation to protect. So I would say for things like that, things that plug into the mains in particular, and also things that contain rechargeable batteries, because that can be a source of problems as well, you know, get it from a reputable source online or in the high street. Spend a little bit of money and protect your devices and you know, your home's lives and property.
Let's go really fast, because there's a lot to get through here. Surface or iPad Pro for PowerPoints, meeting notes, browsing and emails, being advised by lots of people to avoid Surface. That's Katie in Norwich.
Okay, so the iPad Pro is a lot closer to being a sort of a grown-up computing device, a PC replacement, if you like. However, there are still a number of things that are better done on a full-blown operating system, be it Windows, such as with the Surface device, or with a Mac running Mac OS. So I think if you're doing grown-up apps, with some exceptions, but for the most part, you're still better off with the Surface type device, which is a Windows PC made by Microsoft with a touch screen. So I would say better for that, not just for the app that you mentioned, but for general use. You're going to get, at the moment, still more grown-up, fully featured applications running on Windows or Mac OS than you will on iOS.
Peter Renfrew says, hi guys, my question, I think a lot of people would have this one, have old PC to sell, dispose of. Yeah. How do I clear all my personal info first, please?
Okay, the safest way is to remove the hard drive or solid state drive and retain it. Now, obviously that affects the value of what you're passing on, and it's a pain for someone else to have to deal with. That is the safest way, and then you either physically destroy it or you keep it safe in your custody. If that's not something you want to do, and by the way, 6-inch nails are quite good through these devices as a form of destroying data. If that's not something you want to do, then it's not enough just to delete the individual files or format the disk. When you format the disk, the data is still there. All you've removed is the index. It's a bit like having a book and tearing out the index pages at the front and back of the book. The data is still there. So there are software tools that will overwrite every bit of information repeatedly. One of the ones that has a free version is called Kill Disk, with a K at the end. Kill Disk, all one word, and that will do. It will rewrite and rewrite zeros and ones in patterns over the data repeatedly. It is theoretically still recoverable, but again, you pretty much have to be a person of interest for someone to take the time and trouble to employ the tools to recover data after Kill Disk has been at it.
It's a good question from Peter. Do you think enough people think about that when they're disposing of laptops, computers?
No, they don't. And there have been studies of this, academic studies, where people have gone to dumps and pulled out PCs and something approaching half of them had private data still on them and accessible. And people don't think about it. And often it's because when people throw out PCs, it's when the drive has died, and they then don't have the ability to run Kill Disk on it, and maybe don't think about or don't have the wherewithal to open the machine and physically remove the hard drive. So this is a problem. And also SSDs, the modern replacement for physical hard drives, they have a lot of benefits, but in some senses they're harder to wipe. So I must admit, I tend to physically, I do run things like Kill Disk, but then I will, on top of that, because I'm a belt and braces type of boy, I'll remove the drive and destroy it as well.
We're going to go to Charles in Cambridge in 2 seconds, but I want to get to Rob's question. My question is that I'm partially sighted, macular degeneration, and I need a new laptop as I'm starting a degree course and will be doing lots of research. Good luck with that. And so need a laptop with a good readable screen, but also some technology that can read documents aloud to me. Yeah. Any recommendations would be really helpful.
Okay, so in terms of software that can read things aloud to you, the classic bit of software that does that is called JAWS, as in the shark. There are others as well, but that's probably the best known one. And look at the various charitable organisations that deal with visual impairment, particularly the RNIB, they have a lot of information on these specialist products, software products. Things like iPads and iPhones and smartphones, I mean, on an iPhone, all you need to do is swipe down with two fingers and it starts reading whatever's on the screen, be it a book or a website or what have you. So a lot of that technology is built into some devices. And also in terms of sort of being able to view it, so with age-related macular degeneration, the problem is with the central vision, but the peripheral vision is still there, and often people can still read screens with AMD, be it wet or dry AMD, both sites, you still have peripheral vision. So what you then need is to invoke the operating system's accessibility options to allow you to have big text, to allow you to run a virtual magnifying glass over areas of the screen to magnify it. And the other thing that's important is to have the right sort of lighting, particularly on things like print. You know, you don't want, with AMD, you don't want direct lighting and, you know, going blinding you and going straight into your eye, because an eye with AMD is particularly susceptible to, you know, direct light and ultraviolet light. But what you want is a good lighting level throughout the room where you are, and this will also make a big difference. The only other thing I'd say with regard to a laptop is one of the things that people with visual impairment often do is, even if they need a laptop when they're out and about, when they go home, they plug that laptop into a large screen, and you can even plug it into a sort of a 40-inch flat screen TV set using an HDMI connector. Most laptops will support that, and then you can have something which is big and bright to look at. In terms of the viewing on the laptop screen, obviously the bigger the screen, the better, and to have a decent resolution. Mac OS that runs on Apple Macintoshes is slightly more advanced in some of its features in terms of being able to deal with different resolutions on a screen. Windows can be a bit clunky, but it does work on Windows as well. But the Mac solution tends to be a bit neater in some ways.
Thank you very much. I hope, Rob, good luck for your continuing education there. Let's go to Charles in Cambridge. Charles, I think you've got a bit of a laptop question as well.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm thinking of going to buy one of either the Surface laptop.
Yeah.
The Surface Book, or the Surface Book with the performance base. All of them will have Intel Core i7 processors.
Yes.
The laptop is 7th generation, whereas the two Surface Books are only 6th generation. I was wondering which would I be better for. I'd be using it basically for running the Office 365 suite and Adobe, design, drawing, graphics, handwritten notes, editing photos, listening to music, and doing research on the net.
Okay, so the processor, as you've said, an i7, even a dual-core i7, will be more than adequate for all of those uses. What you need to look at is to make sure you've got enough RAM.
It'll be the 16 gig RAM.
Okay, all right.
For the Surface Book and the two Surface Books, and one terabyte of memory.
Yeah.
Whereas the laptop, unfortunately, is still 16 gig RAM, but it's only 512 gigabytes of memory.
512 is adequate. Just don't go below 256 on any device these days, because it's not enough. And the more that you can afford, the better. And bear in mind, you can also add storage. Look, all of those will do the job more than adequately for you. So then it's a question of the form factor. That's to say, you know, the size and shape of the machine. So, for example, if you're considering a Surface Pro, which is effectively a tablet with an add-on keyboard and a kickstand at the back, that's not very good for putting it on your lap. There's a reason why laptops are called laptops, because they sit nicely on the laptop.
I just can't get on with the Surface Pro.
Yeah, so if I were going for that sort of spec, for most uses, I would go for a laptop device. But beyond that, it's to do with the ergonomics, you know, the size of the screen, the feel of the keyboard, and these are very personal considerations as well. I mean, all of those products are, you know, from a technical point of view, will be more than up to the task. I think the most important thing is to get the adequate RAM, because you can always add storage afterwards as well if you need to externally, but with the RAM, you know, you can't do that.
Unfortunately none of the Surface laptop books come with more than 16 gig.
No, that's right. And
what would you like, Rich? What would you like, Charles? How much would you like?
Well, I personally would prefer 32.
Yeah, the more the better, and particularly if you're ever going to run lots of software or lots of tabs open on your browser, or virtualization. So if you wanted to run an operating system within an operating system, which things like software developers and things do when they want to test their software against lots of different operating systems, and they tend to need more. But 16 gigabytes will be good for the life of the machine, I think. You know, maybe by the end of 4 years you may start wishing you had 32, but most users... Did you say you're doing video editing or photo editing?
Both.
Right. So again, yes, 32 would be better, but it's not available in that.
My desktop has got 32 gig and 3 terabytes. So, I can do it on there, but it's nice to have a laptop which I can take out with me and use it if I need outside as well, for presentations.
Yeah, and on that 32-gigabyte machine, you know, you can use Windows to actually tell you how much of that RAM is in use at any given time. If you hit Control-Alt-Del and follow the instructions from there, you can actually see how much is in use and which processes are using what. You may find that actually you don't go into above 16 gig very often anyway. But there we are. Look, all of them will do it. The other thing to watch for is the connectivity options. That's to say the range of connectors and ports that are available on that machine. Just make sure that they will meet your requirements, you know, because Surface laptops are generally okay. But if you say get a MacBook, it has one port. And then you're into the land of dongles, which tends to negate.
Can get a bit complicated. Charles, thank you so much for that. I'm going to
raise it.
Yeah, sure, please.
Is there a big difference between 6th generation and 7th generation?
Not a big difference. Partly it's to do with the amount of power that the chip uses. So you're talking about Kaby Lake.
That's right, yeah, on the laptop.
Yeah, so it is worth going for the Kaby Lake for two reasons. One is they will give you better battery life because they're more power efficient and they're a little bit faster as well. So you might see in the processor, you might see sort of 10-15% speed bump, but that doesn't mean the machine overall will be 10-15% faster, but it's nice to have. And also, if you get the latest version that has the Kaby Lake processors, there will be other improvements other than the processor in the same machine. So I think if you can afford it, it's worth going for the latest generation.
It's worth going for the 7th generation.
Yeah, it's not as big a difference as it used to be from Intel, like from one generation to the other. They're not making these huge leaps forward, but they've tended to shy away from trying to make big performance boosts and try and look at this power consumption problem, because Intel's main competitors run much more power efficient chips and therefore are being used in all sorts of mobile devices. So Intel has lost out to its competitors
The actual battery consumption doesn't bother me so much, because I'm normally always close to a mains outlet wherever I'm going to be, so I can always plug it in.
I think the other thing is, you know, if something consumes less power, it also generates less heat.
Also,
by the way, if it's sitting on your lap, not being funny, but from a fertility point of view, it's better to have something that doesn't run too hot.
You're back on fertility again.
There's
a running theme here this
year. But there's actually clear data on this that people's male's fertility is affected by prolonged use of hot laptops.
I'm sure it is.
On the lap.
Charles, thank you so much for your call.
Fevzi, thank you so much. Good
thank
night.
You so Pleasure. Much. Good night to you as well. Have a good night's sleep. Fevzi, I want to rush through these. We've got loads. So this is going to be a speed round for you now. Okay,
I'll do my best. I'm not good at this.
No. We're going to put you to it. David Lees, my PC is an old AMD 1.8 processor, 2 gig RAM, and won't play movies properly. If it does play at all, the sound is always about 5 minutes in front. My phone has a lot less processor, but plays the movies fine. Why is this, and what can I do to my PC? It hasn't got a separate graphics card because it's not a PCI connection.
Yeah, so if you can upgrade the RAM in that particular machine, if it will go at least, let's say, to 4 gigabytes, that would be great. But otherwise, it's you know, if it's a machine of a certain age, as I alluded to before, the infrastructure will be old. And don't underestimate your phone. Your phone probably has more oomph in it than certainly my phone has more oomph in it than a 4-year-old desktop PC typically would have had. So your phone may have more processing capability than you realize.
Increase the RAM on that one. We've got one here from Richard the Milkman. Hi, guys. I can imagine that in the future, or now, even all this data about your state of health, the foods you eat, the cigarettes, beers and sweets you buy via cards will be available to insurance companies, etc. And hence, good luck getting life insurance for a reasonable price.
It's a real concern. And also, you know, with a lot of car insurance companies, they put these telematics boxes in there, these little black boxes that if you agree to have one, they'll give you a cheaper price. The reason for that is they can tell if you personally are a good driver or not, because and whether you were the cause of an accident as well. These are good for people with nothing to fear, but I don't think any of us really fall into that category, frankly, but it's the way it's going, so we can only take mitigating measures, I'd suggest.
This is from Tim. Dear Up All Night, I'm getting trolled on Facebook. How do I block people who I don't know but are somehow sending me abuse?
Well, there is a facility to
there
to,
is, isn't it?
Yeah, you can just block. You can block individual people. Quite simply,
just go to your settings.
You can do that. And also, if you are getting that sort of abuse, it's worth reporting the individual as well. Just not just blocking them, but reporting them to Facebook.
A lot of people wouldn't do that, would they? Then let it be.
No. You should report them, because if they're doing it to you, they may be doing it to others as well.
Jed asked a question here that I think my dad would also like to ask you. Jed, to compare you to my father, my S7 Edge does not support AOL Mail. Is AOL becoming redundant?
Yes. Yes, it is. I mean, AOL is people who use... No one really goes and gets AOL Mail now. It's just people who've been using it for the last 10, 20 years are still on it.
And yeah, my dad is. I'm trying to get him off it.
I don't think it's a great thing to have. It's a bit clunky these days, and there are better options. Again, one of the best sort of free email services is Gmail from Google. But again, it's this thing about if you're not paying for a product, you are the product. So Google give you free email. Why do they do that? Because they scan the contents of your emails, not necessarily for nefarious purposes, but then you might find that, you ask a friend in an email about going on holiday, and the next thing is up pop some ads offering you holidays. They are learning as much about you as they can, and their terms of service now allow them to combine all the information from the use of the Google web browser to your Gmail, to your Google Home device, anything. They combine it all and they build up. They say that Google knows when your daughter is pregnant before you do. I would posit that they also know who the father is. I mean, they really know
so
much.
I have a daughter. Don't put that thought in my mind at this time of the morning. You're doing really well here on your speed round, I have to say. If we connected you to Bluetooth, I think you'd be getting a good plus. Fevzi, Martin in Belfast here. I recently tried to run a flight simulator game on my laptop, which worked fine until now. The laptop won't now run it, stating that I should log on as administrator and try again. However, I am the administrator. I have not changed any settings. The laptop is 8 years old now. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it could be that the installation of the software has become corrupted. So it is, I mean, it's old. It's old advice, but it's still good advice. It's probably worth, if you still have the original disks or can download it again, to uninstall it and reinstall it as administrator, of course. The fact that it's giving you that message might indicate that the software has become, corrupted.
There we go, Martin. I hope that was useful. Now, here's some feedback for you, Fevzi. The Gadget Detective website looks a lot better. So there's good news. But it said, Mart says it doesn't work. Any news?
Well, it does work, but it's a Flash-based website, so it requires some people to have or to activate Flash. So, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a retro website, to be honest with you. But, no, it works. There's an active community on there. So there's a free tech advice forum on there, so people can go along there and they don't have to register. They can just come along and get advice. But if you can't access the site or you don't want to access the site, you can come follow me on Twitter, which is at Gadget Detective. You can ask me questions there and I will do my best. And also for follow-ups from this program as well.
Yeah, you've been posting whilst the show is on. And the last one here, you've managed to successfully complete your task, Fevzi. Ben here, my wife has a USB hard drive with photos and documents on which stopped working. Is there any way at all of recovering the data? I'm sure that's a problem that many of us have.
Potentially, yes. It depends what the cause of the failure is. There are programs such as Get Data Back, which is you have to pay for. There's a free version which scans the hard drive and tells you what it can recover, and then you pay for it to get that version. There's a free tool called Recover, which is spelled RECUVA.
I've used that, is a
recovery tool, and that's also useful for things like memory cards as well, not just hard drives. There are tools. There are also, I mean, it depends on the value of the data. There are specialist services where if, let's say, they charge you a lot of money. I mean, it goes into hundreds and thousands sometimes. But they can, for example, replace the circuit board on a drive if that's what's failed. Or they can even physically remove the platters and install them in a new drive. It's very sophisticated stuff. But if that sort of... script that you've been working on for 3 years but haven't packed up is on there, you may consider it. Or if there are photos that you don't have.
How much should we back up? You know, if you've got something on a hard drive, how many other devices should you back it up on?
Okay, so one backup is not a backup. I would recommend three. I would recommend at least one of those is off-site. So that could be a cloud-based backup, or it could be copied across onto a hard drive and then you give the hard drive for safekeeping to a family member or something like that. Because the thing is, if you've got a backup and it's on the drive sitting next to the computer and there's, God forbid, a fire or a theft, likely you're going to lose the contents of both. So that's not really a reliable backup. And the backup could fail. Or if there was an electrical surge, it could damage both at once. So it's important to have at least one of your backups up, either in the cloud, which depends what you're backing up, whether you're happy to do that, or at least in an encrypted form on a physical drive stored elsewhere, maybe at your workplace or, you know, at your mum's house or whatever it is, you know, to do that, because that's the safest thing. And also the frequency of backup. So people say, how often should I back up? The answer to that is, how much data are you prepared to lose? If you're backing up weekly, that means you're prepared to lose up to a week's worth
of data.
That's
up to you, isn't it? That's something you're going to have to decide. Fevzi, you did a great job as always, and you really did well there, getting in all those answers. Go off and brush your teeth, and we'll speak to you next week. We'll be checking up on your Bluetooth app to see how you did there. There we go. That's Fevzi. That's the end of the tech phone-in. Hope you got the answers that you wanted for